Good morning. It's 15th of August. Our New Testament reading today is Mark chapter 10. Once again, I'm going to read to you from Brother Lou Sargent, and this is his commentary on the section starting in verse 32 of the chapter. Mark now sets forth clearly the Lord's destination. They were in the way going up to Jerusalem. Jesus, his face set like a flint, was walking ahead, deep in his own thoughts. As the disciples followed, his shoulders, the carriage of his head, and every movement indicated the burden of a determined purpose. There was something new in his whole mien, which gave them a feeling of consternation and communicated fear even to the mixed company who came on behind. Only Mark describes the scene and the effect on the disciples. And the picture he paints, once it has gripped the imagination, is unforgettable. Jesus paused till the 12 caught up with him. Taking them to him, he told them privately once again, and now in greater detail, of the things which were about to converge upon him when they arrived at the capital. For the first time, he told them that the Jewish leaders would hand him over to the Gentiles. It was these who would mock him and spit upon him and scourge him and kill him. So would be fulfilled the prophecy of the servant of the Lord, "I gave my back to the smiters and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting." That, of course, comes from Isaiah chapter 50. But as always, the prediction ended with the assurance, "And after 3 days he will rise again." Even now the thoughts of the 12 were set on what they might gain rather than on what he must give. In an oriental court, the principal ministers sat on either side of the throne. On the Mount of Transfiguration, Moses and Elijah had vanished, leaving vacant places beside the Messiah. With this in mind, the sons of Zebedee came, treating Jesus as already a king who could dispense favours, and asking the unnamed boon. "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." The Lord recalled them to the suffering. "You do not know what you are asking," he said. "Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" Glibly, as though they were thinking only of deeds of valour in fighting for the kingdom, they answered, "We are able." Jesus replied, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand and my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." In what sense did Jesus use this concept of the cup? Clearly, as a figure of suffering linked in his mind with that cup at the Passover meal, which he would make the emblem of his poured out life. Did it bear for Jesus also something of its earlier associations with judgment? Not indeed judgment on him personally, but upon the sins of the world which he was to bear as men's representative. Jesus was deeply conscious of the burden of men's sins which rested upon him. It was when he was about to be arrested that he said, "The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it?" He was to be subjected to a travesty of human judgment, but behind it all would be a divine judgment in which sin would be the accused and would be condemned when he, in his flesh, was made a sin offering. It is in that sense, and that sense alone, that he can be said to have drunk of the cup of God's wrath. That he did so is the means of our salvation, for which we thank God. Thank you for listening to me.